Welcome back to Directly Current, the EV Politics Podcast. I'm Max Patton, and this week we have a very exciting guest. It's Dave Axelrod. In case you've been living under a rock and don't know who he is, he had a very key role in the Obama campaigns of 2008 and 2012. He frequents the cable circuits of CNN and the like, talking about this election race, of course, with his decades of campaign experience. He is in many ways the patron saint of rationality in American politics. And if you want to hear more Dave on podcast, he does a weekly one with our buddy Mike Murphy from episode one, who of course is involved in the EV Politics podcast. And they, along with John Heilman, talk about this election race and all kinds of political junky news. But in this episode, we want to talk to Dave about, one, destigmatizing the partisan reputation that EVs have developed with his political experience and insights. And two, this is the fun one, we're going to recommend Dave an EV for him and his family to own and be proud of, because he actually did briefly drive an electric vehicle, but he actually returned it to the dealer within a few days because he had a few frustrations. So let's figure out what exactly went wrong and what we can find that will suit the Axelrod family. So without blabbering on further, let's introduce to Directly Current, Dave Axelrod.
I'm happy to be with you, Max.
Of course, and my pleasure.
I always want to be current.
Well, you qualify with that today. And I have to say, of course, I know who you are, but my grandparents, who are cable TV addicts, they speak very highly of you all the time as well.
They might be classmates of mine. Never know.
Maybe. They are pretty young for their age. But I wanted to start, David, talking about EV polarization. What are your thoughts on the messaging between left and right, specifically on batteries and EVs?
Look, I think the whole issue of green energy, that whole idea has become deeply polarized. It's become a cultural issue. And if you acknowledge the need to make a transition in the economy, that if you acknowledge the existence of climate change and so on, you are in the other tribe for conservatives. I also think, Max, there's a lack of recognition on the part of the left that there is a whole economy that is linked to fossil fuels and gas, and people make a living doing that. And then I think the third thing is Americans like choice. They don't want to be told that they have to drive a certain kind of car. And this to Americans, to some Americans, seems like they're being mandated to switch their habits, to buy something else and adjust to something new for all these reasons. And then on the left, I think it's, in some ways, it's a cultural badge of honor to drive an electric vehicle. So yeah, this is more complicated than simply the choice of a vehicle. It has become a cultural debate.
Yeah, it's very much, it seems to me, like you said, it comes with these baggages and cultural associations, but also partially an ego thing. Like, I drive a big gasoline engine that makes noise. I drive an electric car, like you said, that's a badge for some progressives. Specifically, if you were putting your 2012 hat on, and you're not in this position, but if you were going to tell the Harris campaign, say, how to message around EVs, do you think they're doing it right at the moment? Obviously, it's not a frontline issue, but it does concern American jobs. It does concern manufacturing. It does blend in China. If you had to think about how they're going to phrase EVs and tiptoe around that, because Trump is definitely going to mention that, what would your advice be on that?
Well, Trump has muted it somewhat because Elon Musk is his oligarch.
He's giving him a good salary there.
He's talking about it a little bit less now. Look, the answer to that question is contained within the way you asked it. At the end of the day, what we learned in 2012 and 2008 is that the climate issue works best when it is not just tackled as an issue about the plague of climate change, the challenge of climate change itself, but as a potential economic boon. That in fact, it's not just about driving electric vehicles, it's about making them and where we're going to make them and who's going to have those jobs and how communities that may feel like they're going to be disadvantaged by a conversion to electric cars will benefit from all of the economic activity that can flow from that. So it can be a win situation. And you're right, they're not talking about it very much. I don't think it's probably indexing high in their polling, but I know from my friend Mike Murphy and your friend, who is maniacally pursuing this issue, that in states like Michigan, where auto production has always been such a central element of their economy, that arguments around the upside of this are important. And as you pointed out in your question, the other question is, are we going to see that market, the production of cars, the production of batteries, and so on, to China? And because the Chinese are all in on production of electric vehicles. There are arguments to be made on this. I think there's another climate change argument that's not related to, that's probably immaterial in some ways to this discussion, but I woke up this morning to news of a potential catastrophic hurricane in the southeast, and that is being fueled by overheated waters in the Gulf of Mexico. We're getting more and more evidence about why being smart about this is important. But I know that's different than, it's a little bit off message probably for what you're tackling here.
No, I think that is a big part of it. Obviously, the progressives who are believe strong in the climate issue, I think their vote is somewhat spoken for. But if you mentioned Elon, Trump's buddy oligarch there, I feel like the politics around it have complicated somewhat recently, where lots of people on the left, like you said, this is maybe not the banner issue the Harris campaign should focus on, aside from maybe the manufacturing story and the let's be strong on China story. But lots of folks in the American left I've seen now have soured on Tesla because of Elon's reputation. And so right. Is the issue just a poison pill all around, maybe?
I think that there is certainly an impact on Tesla in liberal circles. It used to be a badge of honor to drive a Tesla because they were pioneers in electric vehicle market. Now everybody's selling them and looking for other alternatives. And the good news is there are a lot of alternatives now. American manufacturers are manufacturing electric vehicles, and globally manufacturers are manufacturing electric vehicles. So there's a lot more choice out there. So the fact that Tesla's discredited in the minds of some shouldn't retard their interest in owning or driving an electric vehicle.
Yeah, you have a lot going on in Michigan between GM and Ford, who are hemming and hawing about some of the big capital investments around EVs, but nonetheless, they are pushing more competition out there. So Tesla is very much not the only game in town on this story. It's just funny to me, and it must be funny to you too, because you've seen this story. I remember Tesla during the Obama years, obviously, was treated very differently. And obviously, they interacted with the government very differently. But that's not the case in 2024.
No, if Musk weren't behaving like a lunatic on his social media network and saying outrageous and false things, being completely mindlessly provocative, I think that it would be less, but you have to separate out the issues. And if you're interested in an electric vehicle, there are plenty to choose from. And some you may find much more amenable than even in terms of the quality of the ride than Tesla. Yeah.
And that's a great segue, David, because now we get to go to the fun part. We've covered the national politics story. Let's help potentially get you into a new EV. So you had an EV before.
I don't know if I can fit one in this room, but yeah.
Wherever you can find one room up in Illinois or New York or wherever you are at the moment, we're not in the business of product placement here at Directly Current. So we don't need to say what exactly you drove before. But from what Mike told me, to you, it seemed like a spaceship, too much going on. You didn't necessarily fall in love with it.
Well, I'll tell you the exact story. And I won't name the manufacturer because I don't want to. They were very nice about it. I don't want to impugn them. But I got a call that I've always been interested. I drive a hybrid and I want to do my part. And I've driven friends' electric vehicles and so on. And it's interesting to me. But my son called. I have an adult son who was buying one. And he said at this particular dealership, there were deals on demonstrator cars or whatever, that with cars with very few miles on them, going for a really good price, and I should go down there. And I did, and got carried away in the moment and ended up driving home in one. but there wasn't time for them to go through everything for me. And I got home and the guy came the next day, and it was like a 2-hour orientation because it was a very complicated console and all kinds of bells and whistles. And then, and this is the thing, Max, that you've got to address for me as a potential driver of an EV. We went, I hadn't yet hooked up a charger in my home. We went to charge, to look at it for a charging station, and there were long lines at the charging stations. Many of the charging stations weren't working. Some didn't adjust to my, that particular car. And I thought, who needs this? And it started getting me worried about, what about when I'm on the highway? And if I want to take a longer trip in this car, it's fine in the city if you've got a charger in your home and you can charge the car. But what if you're not around your home? So those were the issues. So I told the guy at the end of the demonstration, the guy who came over to do this for me, he said, do you have any questions? And I said, yeah, can I return this car? And he was very nice about it, which is why I'm not mentioning the manufacturer. So I was spooked by the whole experience. But Mike Murphy tells me that you are the therapist who can work through this with me and get me back in the mindset where I can go and get on the horsepower again.
Yeah, before we get into moving on, we've got to cover the trauma in the first place, right? It sounds like you had two issues, right? You had one, the screen paralysis.
It's terrible. It was terrible.
Oh, gosh. Yes. You had the screen paralysis, right? Lots of stuff going on. And I have to say, we're not naming names here, but some manufacturers are more known than that than others for just hitting you over the head with the technology. And definitely some people, yeah, people who are maybe not Gen Z and people have the money to buy a new car,
yes,
maybe don't always love that stuff.
Yes.
And then two, you've got the charging issue, right? Confidence about charging stations. I've got bad news for you, Mike. It's getting better, but in lots of areas like Illinois, Chicago in particular, my girlfriend's family's from there. So that's why I know.
Most of the driving I do is not in Illinois, though. Most of the driving I do, but some of the driving's in, has been in rural Michigan.
It's not great.
I've spent a lot of time in Arizona.
Yeah. Yeah. Arizona is actually surprisingly good, I found on my, because I do all kinds of.
That's where I had the traumatic experience, though, in the Phoenix area. Maybe it's that so many people are buying electric cars there that these charging stations are filled in. It takes a while to charge a car.
Yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head. One of the areas I've noticed where it's actually not good is also California, very much an early adopter EV market. They just don't have enough infrastructure to meet the demands of everyone there. So you do have these charging issues. And unfortunately, we can't solve that today, but we can at least solve the vehicle end. And you also said it does take a while to charge an electric car. That's true. I do want to rephrase this for yourself and for listeners. Some of the models in the market now, of course, all things working perfectly in a perfect world, can charge really well. We're talking getting 300 miles of range in 20 minutes. That is possible with some models. So let's first think, you probably want to buy it.
Let me know what those are.
Yeah, I will. But first, we've got to narrow some stuff down. So you probably want to buy an American car, I would guess, right?
All things being equal, I would do that, yeah.
Yeah. And then we mentioned Tesla, and you may probably don't want a Tesla, is my guess.
There's not a way in hell that I'd drive a Tesla.
Okay, we got our quote for the intro, for the cold open. Perfect. There are some really strong options from Detroit to consider. So you've got, between GM, some exciting new EVs, and Ford as well, American built. We also have the Koreans to consider with Kia and Hyundai, who are building EVs in Georgia. So first, let's figure out, what kind of size of vehicle do you want? Do you want an SUV?
What I drive now is a very small SUV. I really like the car. It's a hybrid, and it's a small SUV. That would be the sort of category I'd put myself in.
Okay, small crossover. Luckily, lots of Americans.
Crossover.
Lots of Americans love those cars too. So there's lots of competition on the market. So some of the, I think the best one potentially, though, the screen may be too far in the high-tech direction, would be the...
Let's assume that I'm trainable.
Okay. A dealer can sit down with you. They can get you squared away. The Ford Mustang Mach-E is really one to consider. I don't know if you've seen these.
I have,
yeah,
yes.
They're nice. Yeah. I personally, and Mike would agree with me, I think it's a little bit of a heresy to call it a Mustang, but they made that branding decision. It is a electric crossover, but it's a nice looking one. It's got a cool interior. Like you said, you ended up with Tesla. It's got the panel gaps in the right place. It's painted the right way. And it is actually sold pretty affordably at the moment. So that's one strong one to consider.
How's the ride?
The ride, that's a great question. So unfortunately, I've noticed, because I used to be an EV journalist back before I was in law school, so I spent a lot of time in lots of these. It was firm, a little bumpy. However, believe this or not, this may seem overly exotic. Ford makes a rally version of the Mach-E that's made for people in Dakar and people doing these kinds of competitions, but they sell it to the average consumer. I found the suspension in that is magical because they made it floaty enough. It's really comfortable. It's a little overstyled. It's maybe a little extra, but I find that was really special, the way that one rode.
Yeah, because that I actually drove a friend's Ford Mach-E, as I was called, the Mustang mm-hmm. thing. It had tons of power, as electric cars tend to do, but it was cool, but it felt stiff to me.
Yes, that's not an uncommon complaint. So I would say if you go in Mach-E direction, put on your rally helmet, get the rally version. It is a good daily car, actually. One other to consider from the other big company in Detroit, GM killed, unfortunately, their affordable hatchback, the Bolt. Lots of people love that car, my girlfriend included, but its replacement at the moment is one that I think suits your size perfectly, right? It's the small SUV. It's the Equinox EV. So it's basically an EV version of the gas Equinox, super popular model. It's incredibly affordable, and I think it gives you over 300 miles of real-world range for its base model, which is really good for an EV.
What are the others that you mentioned? Kia manufacturers here. What are some of the other? Yeah. Just go the range.
Yeah, let's run through them. Kia makes what's called the EV6, and Hyundai makes the IONIQ 5. So those models at the moment aren't made in the US. I mentioned those because those are the ones that you would be shopping for size-wise. But let's say you want to bring all the dogs or all your friends and family along. The EV9 is more of a minivan. It's an analog to, if you've seen the gas Kia Telluride.
Yeah, I'm not going to do that.
Okay, you're not. Well, that one's the one that's built in Georgia. So there is a local element there. The IONIQ 5 isn't. However, if you've seen them on the road, I think they're really nice looking. And they're quite nice to drive.
How's the ride on those?
Pretty good. Very soft. It's not a performance machine. You're not going to be hugging it through corners, but it's perfectly nice for being comfortable. One other to consider, also built in the US, it's a little large, or at least it's large by European standards, much smaller than a Kia EV9, is Volvo's EX90. So that's basically their electric analog to the gas XC90. That's built in South Carolina.
And how does that
really well? It's a super, super nice platform, very premium. It does use some Chinese technology because Volvo is owned by the Geely Group, but it's a really nice car. The interior is amazing. The sound system is something else. It's a super nice place to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that runs our gamut. So any kind of leanings, inclinations you have among what we've gone over?
I'm not leaning yet, but I'll tell you this. I plan to, when I go back to Arizona, which I do when it gets under 100, I plan to go and test drive a bunch of these.
Okay.
Murphy was pushing his Volkswagen.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot that. I'm glad you mentioned that. Murphy would be remiss if I didn't. So the ID4 is Volkswagen's SUV. That is built now in Chattanooga, Tennessee. That I find, I don't love everything about it. There's small things like the window switches where they made a really weird ergonomic decision. You have to press a button to toggle the rear windows. There's a lot of little things I don't like about that, but it's a nice riding car. If you've seen Murphy's, I think it's not bad looking. Any thoughts on the Volkswagen?
No, he's been relentless on it.
He loves his German vehicles.
And I saw him. He actually came. I rode around the block with him, I think, in it. I don't know. I can't remember when I was in L.A. Mm-hmm. He likes to cruise L.A. in his Volkswagen.
Yeah, it's a very nice under-the-radar car, too, but perfectly has enough space.
Under the radar, does it drive so slowly?
It's actually still pretty quick. Like you said, all EVs are pretty quick. It's not going to keep up with a performance Tesla, but it'll get you going in traffic for sure. So that's one more to consider. So maybe we can, maybe Mike can have you slip a recorder when you test drive and we can get some thoughts, but glad to give you something to chew on, David. Thank you again so much for coming on. It's been a privilege.
Of course. And good luck. You're on the cutting edge here.
Yeah, just try and.
And let me ask you a question before I go. What do you feel the future is like? Because so much, it feels like public policy has something to do with how rapidly this transition can happen.
That's this podcast in a nutshell. I think it's going to be really interesting. Obviously, the effects of this presidential election, I think, are really going to determine what it looks like here in the U.S. Bipartisan, I think there is an agreement that American jobs are good. At least pragmatic Republicans can see that. And you also have a consensus that we do need to be competitive against China. So I think the tariffs that the Biden administration has already passed have been a big deal, somewhat controversial in the automotive industry, but also I think welcomed by many people who understand we could use a little bit more time to be competitive. So there's so many interesting areas to explore. We also touched on charging. I think Secretary Buttigieg's administration, the DOT, has done some really interesting things there. Maybe not perfect, but it's a really challenging problem to solve. And we absolutely need to tackle it. So I think their head's in the right place. But yeah, there's never a dull moment in EV world.
All right. It's good to be with you, Max. Thank you
again, Dave. What a fun episode of Directly Current. I'm so happy we had the privilege to have Dave Axelrod on. Thank you for him for giving some of his time. And of course, his staff. Gotta give a shout out to Sarah Lena for helping us with booking and organizing this recording. As you can imagine, Dave is a very busy guy in this season. Again, if you want to hear more of him, he does frequent the Hacks on Tap podcast with his buddies Mike Murphy and John Heilman. And I am, of course, at Max Patton. And if you like this podcast, you can keep listening to Directly Current because we upload every week on Tuesdays. You can also rate us in your podcast app of choice and subscribe there as well. We're also on YouTube in case you want to see my face for whatever reason. Thank you again for listening, and we'll see you next week.